fragility of any one nation's independence in a world where imperialism exists elsewhere. What these statements seem to demand is an unwavering attention to the local instance, pesticide in this stream, legalized racism in this town, colonialism in this country, with the capacity to imagine, recognize, articulate, and actualize the relationship between the local instance and a planetary, dare I say, universal scale. What role can the literary play in such an ethical movement between these scales? How can text bring to light or challenge a moral economy of distance that otherwise obscures relationships between sites and subjects thousands of miles apart? How can this kind of literary experience offer an alternative to the webs of responsibility, risk, and harm that, for example, join Michigan, Vietnam, and India through the corporate structures of Dow Chemical? The slow violence of dioxin pollution in Michigan, planned military ecological assault of napalm in Vietnam, and the catastrophic event of Union Carbide in Bhopal. And I think that this last photograph is really interesting. It's a graffiti from Bhopal Kiyavas, Voice of Bhopal, listing the demands of the organization more than 20 years later. And if you look at the very last one, compensation from Dow, the demand reflects the contemporary situation of corporate responsibility, whereby the responsibilities of Union Carbide are now those of Dow. I articulate the series of questions without answers because they chart my own road forward. I offer them to you for discussion. I do want to spend some time with a related question, however, which is this. Is thinking of the planet the same thing as thinking from below? Thinking from below, of course, is the intervention of a post-colonial or subaltern studies committed to undoing the epistemic violence that accompanies other, more spectacular forms of domination. Reading the recent work of Vandana Shiva, one might begin to imagine an Earth democracy that fully realizes, as if for the first time, the promise of equality and right to survival for all beings, which would be impossible without thinking from below. Shiva writes, the Earth democracy movement is a commitment to go beyond the triple crises of economic injustice and inequality, ecological non-sustainability, and the decay of democracy and the rise of terrorism. How can we, as members of the Earth community, reinvent security to ensure the survival of all species and the survival and future of diverse cultures? What is subtle but striking in Shiva's work is her unabashed use of the first-person plural. After having spent many weeks trying to get my students in post-colonial theory to be self-aware of just who and what they meant by the we and whom they were excluding, here Vandana Shiva was using the we in its second most universal sense. We as a species. We humans. A prehistory of the we in post-colonial ecologies would demand, first of all, a confrontation with the false universalism of the we in the European Enlightenment, the we that was imagined to encompass all humanity, but whose actual constituents were a lucky few on good days in Europe. The post-colonial prehistory of the we would demand, secondly, an accounting for the stratifications created on a global scale by this history, stratifications that make it impossible to speak in terms of the universal we. And it would also demand a recognition that without a reconstitution, or rather a constitution for the first time of the first we the people, we the humans, humbly speaking, as well for the non-human, and a recognition that without a reckoning with the history, the obvious, the universal we, the planet will no longer be a home to us in whatever sense of we. For the moment, however, I think it's important to keep in mind the difference between thinking like a planet, which may well be something like thinking from below. Both, in any case, are figurative modes of imagining, thinking like, as opposed to the actual thinking about the planet that is happening all around us. The dissemination's progress narrative is, after all, a way of thinking about the planet, too. And the newly emergent spatial ethics of world imagining that I have mentioned also risk replicating the inequalities and exclusions of earlier universalist projects founded upon the ideal of a unitary globe from the Roman Empire to post-colonial neoliberal globalization. Thinkers ranging from Dennis Cosgrove to Bruce Robbins have reminded us that imagining the planet, far from being a vision from below, has long been undertaken from above. The Apollonian view, as in the dramatic photographs from space in the 1960s and 70s that I have been using here. And I think it's interesting that this, I think, is the most iconic of these photographs. And you have to, at least I did, I had to look really hard to recognize that it's Africa that's in the middle of this image. I think it's easy to mistake it somehow for the U.S. That's what I'm always tempted to do. Lawrence Beall has argued that eco-criticism is different from the largely identity-based movements that have expanded the literary canon and transformed the assumptions and methods of literary interpretation to include questions of race, gender, and class. The difference is that, in his words, no human can speak as the environment, as nature, as non-human animal. To extend Buell's idea, it is true that no human can speak as the planet, but it is also true that many humans have spoken and acted for it. And Buell risks, I believe, losing track of the ways in which human identities and differentiating histories do profoundly shape what we see and say with regard to nature. World images, images of planetarity, are imagined from particular positions of power and interest. The causes and effects of global climate change are unevenly distributed and locally differentiated. Like civilization or modernity, environmental concern is not an invention of the West to be bestowed upon the world, but rather a multi-form product of interrelated histories. Thinking beyond the parochialism of American wilderness may indeed be a kind of progress for U.S.-based environmentalists, but thinking for the planet can sound an awful lot like the extended progress narrative that begins with the discovery, quote-unquote, of a new world and ranges through the civilizing mission and the sun never setting and manifest destiny and the promise of the market and the Washington Consensus, whose ruins, as I speak, lie all around us, nearly impossible. So let me end where I began, thinking about that beautiful but deadly and deserted road in Martinique. What I did not say about the road sign when I began this talk is that I saw it only in the rearview mirror, only after having traveled a road that was supposed to be